time for In and Around the House with Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105. Now, let's join Tony Wirtz and Ernie Brown for In and Around the House.
Good morning. Welcome in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got a lot of ground to cover. It's going to be a beautiful weekend to get stuff done in and around your house. The weather is going to be picture perfect, and we're going to be bringing in a new client, a new guest a little later on today to share some brand new information with you. Plus, we are also going to get you set for fall decor, what you should be doing with your plants and stuff like that. Good morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. How are you?
I'm doing dandy. Good. I'm high and dry.
I could see that.
You know, and our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to the people in the path of Hurricane Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
That could just be awful. Awful, awful.
Boy, I tell you what, stirring up a lot of issues along the coast of Florida, has he not? Also up there in South Carolina. Is he going ashore? Is he going ashore in Charleston?
All ashore that's going
All
ashore.
All ashore
that's
going ashore. One mean storm. The only storm I think it could be bigger or meaner is one named Ernie.
That's right.
Yeah, you know,
that would be more devastating. This is like the meteorologist Super Bowl. I mean, these weather geeks are absolutely loving it. Not that we're trying to diminish the importance of being safe and the loss of property and stuff like that that's going to obviously occur, but I don't know if we really need one more shot of one more rain-soaked, wind-swept meteorologist standing with debris field going, well, Bill, here we are again. I understand the importance of being informed and getting that shot. I just feel awful for those guys.
It just dramatizes the whole deal.
Yeah.
You know? But did you see the whole pattern? If it loops back, gets into the Gulf Stream?
Yeah.
Maybe build up steam again, you know, because that Gulf Stream current's somewhat warm, and if it cuts back across the state of Florida and gets into the Gulf of Mexico, that could be ugly.
Yeah, and after the second scary skull face image of it, they should have renamed it Hurricane Arambe, because the skull face would look awful.
I didn't catch that.
Oh yeah, there's right before or right after it left Haiti, and there was an image from the satellite.
Mm-hmm.
That there was a skull clearly inside the eye of the storm. Then, a couple of days later, once it had moved a little farther, that image reappeared when it got up close
really?
To the coast of Florida.
That's eerie. And I didn't catch any of that. It's almost like Jack Sparrow. Some pirate kind of thing.
I looked at Lisa the other morning when we were watching that, and I said, well, you know, times like these, it's really nice to be snug as a bug in a rug right here in the heartland of the states. And
I'm with you.
Good old Kentucky tri-state area. I'll take it.
I'm with you. And, you know, speaking of our weather, this morning, nice and pleasant, breezy. I don't know if part of that breeze that we're experiencing this morning is part of this system or not, or something is sweeping down.
A little cool north, down.
But feels great. And you see it, shorts and long sleeves. It's fall, and it's my favorite time of year.
It's the Tony Wirtz fall uniform.
That's right. It's the fall uniform. You can't. Doesn't get any better than that.
No. But the weather, you are correct. The weather is a little bit of a cool down.
Mm-hmm.
It felt more like August than October last week, but that's not going to be the case for today. High temperatures are only going to get up close to the mid-60s for the next 3 days. And overnight lows tonight, 53. Overnight low on Sunday, 46, and then only 44 on Monday.
Ooh.
So we're getting close to that area where you kind of need to be thinking about your plants outside.
Most definitely. And we're going to share some tips with that, as a matter of fact. You know, getting down into the 40s, just as you called it, Al Sleet, that, you know, our plants, you know, our tropical plants we're really speaking of,
right.
We can bring those inside if you're willing to winter those over. And if you've never done it, give it a shot. You have nothing to lose. However, if things work out well for you, you save yourself a couple of dollars for the next season. You don't have to buy a mandevilla or a hibiscus.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of information about bringing your plants in and some of those things that you need to really, really consider, especially when it comes to insects.
Yes. Matter of fact, we were talking last night. Lisa said she thinks she discovered what was affecting our elephant ear. It seemed to all of a sudden dropped a couple of leaves, or they turned brown and, mm-hmm. and folded over, and she went up and picked up the leaf and turned it over, and spider mites or some insect is up underneath there that's just
kind of a webbing.
Yeah, a little action. Bit of a webbing. Yeah. And she goes, what are you going to do? So that was going to be our question for you is, I guess we just go ahead and cut those stems off, pull it out of the ground.
Mm-hmm. No, not yet. You need to let a frost get to it. Okay. It's in the ground, correct?
Well, it's in a gigantic potter.
Oh, just, just let it run its course. Let a light frost get on it. Okay. And you'll cut all the... In your situation, what I like to do is cut all the foliage back except for like one stem, perhaps, and just bring it into the garage or the basement and let it do its thing for the throughout the winter.
In its pot? It just pot and all?
You can do that.
Yeah.
I've done it before. Yeah, you can certainly do that.
I just got a text from her that she's up and listening to the show, so I told her I would ask you as soon as we got the chance to talk about that. But is the light frost just as damaging as the first hard frost, so to speak, for most of those plants? Or
The first couple of light frost, they are indicators, that kind of send plants to signal, hey, things are starting to turn, you need to start thinking about shutting down. It's kind of like the precursor. But don't let a hard freeze get to it. But as long as the ground's not frozen where the bulb becomes damaged as a result of all is well. So last week we had some great information that we had gotten from Jerome Minkfeld from Netherland Bulb, and we were talking about storing some of the bulbs and things like that. So the calycaceas, certainly you want to protect those. I was at someone's house the other day, and they had like four big elephant ear plants in their backyard, and obviously they've had them for a while. And music to my ears, she goes, yeah, we got those from you a couple of seasons ago. Yeah, you can certainly take care of those, winter those over, and then put them back outside the following season, and they just get bigger and bigger and bigger.
We had another one of those situations where someone stopped at the house. Lisa was up working on the porch.
Now, wait a minute. I don't mean to interrupt you, but you're going to talk about the cameras, aren't you?
Yeah,
okay.
I am. Lisa came, or I came home, and Lisa was up on the porch stacking firewood. And getting ready for the winter, and she goes, well, it happened again. She goes, I was over here just putting some stuff away, and I hear this, this guy's walking up. And we have one of those no-knock stickers on the front door, but that doesn't help when somebody walks up to the side of the house. So you can't come up and sell or solicit anything.
Is that what that's for?
Yeah. And so... this guy says, I love those plants on the side of the house, wanting to know what they are and where did you get them. And my wife has mentioned them several times. They walk all the time, back and forth, but for exercise.
Right.
The house.
Right.
And he didn't know what they were, but he knew his wife absolutely loved them. So she goes, they're called Cannas, and they're from a bulb, and you can pick those bulbs up, but it might take you a little bit to get them started. And he complimented on how beautiful they were, and so you may have someone coming down looking for some.
Well, unfortunately, we can't do the cannas right now at this time of year. It's more of a you'll see those in the springtime of from an availability standpoint. Mm-hmm. So, unfortunately, that's one of those you need to lift, and that's what we were talking about last week as well. But yeah, they do make a statement, and they are most definitely well worth the wait when you plant those in the spring. But it's fall. We're going to talk about some bulbs after a while during the show. We're going to talk about a lot of different things. We're going to talk about core aeration. And when we come out of the break, we're going to start talking about you need to think about bringing your plants inside and what you need to consider doing before bringing them in, because you don't want to bring in as little pesky insects.
That's exactly right. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, we need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and we are approaching that time where everyone is starting to think, or should be starting to think, about the plants you're going to be bringing inside.
Most definitely.
And you only want to bring the plants inside.
That's right. So these are some things that might be bugging you when it comes to bringing your plants inside. Yeah. And as Ernie was talking just a moment ago, we start getting into the 40s. That's when we start bringing things inside. And you definitely want to do this. There's a couple of different insects that you might introduce inside. and you may not even be aware of it at all. And some of those are like aphids. Those are the little guys that like to hang out on the tips, the tip growth of plants. They like to hang out on the buds, especially like if you have hibiscus and so forth, mm-hmm. or mandevillas. If you're wanting to save those and bring those in, take it upon yourself to just to do a real close, thorough inspection of your plants. Look for these little pesky fellows, because if not, they're coming in with you, and they may get on some other things in the house. So we definitely want to tell you how to prepare for that. Also, another insect that might, you know, be lurking around on some of your plants is mealybug. Mealybug's easy to identify. It almost looks like little pieces of cotton, you know, that's on the plant itself, on the bud, or right in the joints where the stems and the other little branches like break off.
Just, it's got a cool name.
Mealybug. Really cool, yeah. It looks like cotton.
Yeah.
Also scale, kind of raised bumps.
I avoid scales at all costs.
Yeah, scales at all costs. You might want to step on one and just see where you tip in it. But, you know, scale can also be another issue. Another one, too, shake your plants a little bit and see if you notice a lot of little white flying insects. That's white fly. Definitely a nuisance in the house. You don't want those guys inside. And also spider mite, as you were talking about your elephant ears, you know, mm-hmm. spider mite. You know, those guys will wreak a lot of havoc on your plants. So these are just some of the little guys that might be bugging you or could bug you in the future. So when you bring your plants in, you want to look for these dudes. So what do you do about it? A couple of approaches. One, I would suggest you use a systemic granular insecticide and sprinkle it over the soil surface of your pots. You know, before you bring things right. in, you know, give it a few days. You know, when you water those plants, that activates that product, excuse me, and it works systemically. And when we say that, it gets up into the plant via the root system. And when the insects start to feed on the foliage or the buds, it knocks them out. So it's protecting you. It's like a vaccination. And you got to do that periodically, because those products only last, you know, like 30, 60 days. So that's one approach. That's one thing I would suggest you do. Bonide makes a great systemic granular product just for that. Also, you can look for Fertilume's Triple Action. That will give you a couple ways to protect your plant, not only from an insecticidal point, but also, you know, any kind of fungal issues. You know, it also has a fungicide built into it, an insecticide and miticide. So Fertilume's Triple Action Plus is really good. And again, you could use, if you want to stay on the safer side of things, you can mix up your own little soapy solution. You know, maybe a couple teaspoons of Dawn dishwashing detergent with like a pint of water and spray your plants. Insecticidal soaps are also good to use.
Gotcha.
If you want to stay on the safe side, if you have kids or pets and you're concerned about that. Also, Bayer makes a 3-in-1 product that's very good. It's also, it kills on contact, and it also has a systemic element to it. So any one of those three things or multiple approaches will help you prevent from bringing insects inside when you bring your plants inside. This also applies to some of your tropical plants. Now, we're not just talking about blooming things. We're also talking about, you know, you might have a ficus shrub or mm-hmm. you know, ficus tree. An arbicola or a rubber tree plant. If those kind of plants, you're bringing them inside, you also want to inspect those as well. Very, very important.
Yeah, we have a rubber tree plant that's going to be coming in. But I wanted to ask you, and you're talking about treating all of these, mm-hmm. is there something, or how long should you wait? Well, I guess what I'm saying is, while you're describing this, I see maybe you're putting down some newspapers, putting all your plants on there, treating them, and how long do you wait before you can bring them into the house? Do you need to leave that treatment set out?
Well, that's why we're talking about it now. You know, a good week.
Yeah.
You know, we're still decent weather wise, but you know, give yourself a week to 2 weeks, and you know, you're definitely going to be sure to keep those guys from coming indoors on your plants, hanging out.
Right.
You know, you just might as well, if you're not going to even consider doing so, you might as well just open up the door and say, "Hey, come on in, guys." You know, so just a little added protection, and it just, I would use the systemic granules, and I would also use a spray,
mm-hmm.
and after that, you know, you should be good to go.
Work up underneath the leaves and the stems?
Underneath the leaves, because that's where the party typically takes place.
Agreed.
You know?
Yeah. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We do have a special guest coming up, a new client here from the radio station. Kevin David, the owner and founder of the Appliance Loft, is going to be joining us, as well as Patty. Am I saying that right, Flieger?
Flager, I think.
Flager?
I think it's Flager.
And we'll have those guys here around the 8 o'clock hour. And we're also going to continue to talk about fall, being ready for it, and even a little aeration. Plus, we're also going to revisit our conversation that we had with the basement doctor,
Bobby Miles,
in a few minutes. We'll be right back. Welcome back into Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, getting you ready for fall, bringing your plants inside. You might want to treat them, or you should treat them, inspect them, certainly. But what do you do once you get them inside, Tony?
Oh, things change when you come inside with a plant. Plants are going to behave so differently than they would outside, obviously. And one of the things you're going to need to take into consideration is watering. That's very important, and you're certainly not going to water a plant as often as you would outside, especially during the summer months.
Right.
So you need to be really aware of how much you're watering or how little, and you need to back off. You know, that's usually the demise of a lot of plants, their lives, when people start to, like, cradle the plant and want to take care of it like an infant.
Mm-hmm.
Don't feel compelled to do that. You know, plants want to grow. They want to survive. But a lot of times we feel compelled to overwater plants and just want to baby them.
Sure.
And that's one of the worst things that you can do. So just back off of your watering. Now, if we're bringing in plants such as some of the blooming tropicals, which tropicals have really taken center stage in recent years, you know, those plants, what we want to do, we want to keep them from blooming inside. Although we like those blooms because it exerts a lot of energy to give us those blooms. And if we can reduce that, We're keeping things in check, so to speak. You know, you might want to trim your plants back a little bit. And again, we're going to put a lot of emphasis on inspect them for insects. That's very, very important. And you may see some of your plants like the hibiscus or the mandevilla or bougainvillea, diplodenia, whatever it is you're bringing inside. They may start to show you signs of like yellowing.
Uh-huh.
That's typical.
Is there a shock period?
Well, I don't know if it's really necessarily a shock period, but when you bring those kind of plants in, you want to place them near a window where they can get as much light as possible.
Uh-huh.
So, again, keep an eye on how much you water. You're not going to water as often as you would during the summer months and when they're outside. You're going to see some yellowing. And when you see that, just let it go. If the leaves drop, pick them up, discard those. You don't want to fertilize either.
Mm-hmm.
Back off the fertilization. We don't want to encourage any new growth indoors during the winter months. That new tender growth indoors is like a steak sandwich to aphids and other insects. And don't think that, oh, I don't have insects indoors. It happens.
Yeah.
It really does. So it's relatively easy to do. It's rewarding to do because you can take care of these plants throughout the winter months. They may not look their best like they do during the summer, but rest assured, when you get past the winter months, sometime early spring, after the last potential frost,
mm-hmm.
you take them outside, you get them acclimated to the outdoor situation again, and voila, they'll come on, they'll start looking really nice for you. So it's not difficult to take care of plants.
I didn't know you spoke France. French.
Did I say France? I said plants.
No, voila.
Voila. But it sounds like a chef, voila. However, it's easy to do, and, you know, just anticipate and expect to see some things, you know, yeah. with those plants. Like, it looks like they're struggling,
right?
But don't let that fool you.
That's what I meant by shock, I guess, you know, when they're outside
mm-hmm.
and accustomed to outdoor weather,
right?
And they come inside, it's going to be a little drier,
mm-hmm.
you know, because people are already starting to run their furnaces a little bit.
You think so?
Probably.
Well,
I mean, not us, at least it just...
You don't have a furnace.
It can't be cold enough.
You're living like in a caveman days. You don't even have a furnace. It's all wood burning.
It can't get cold enough for her.
How funny.
But it won't be long.
But those are the key things. You know, when you bring your plants indoors, one is back off the watering.
Mm-hmm.
Two, you know, just keep your eye on the plants for insect issues. Three, do not fertilize. And four, just wait it out. And come next spring, take things outside, and all will be well. That's for sure.
All will be
well. You know, another interesting plant that I'm often asked you know, can we winter these over indoors, are Boston ferns. And you can, but expect things to get a little messy.
Right.
Especially underneath the fern. And, you know, keep them evenly moist. And, you're not going to water those like you would every day during the summer months. And just keep them clean and try and get them as much light as possible. Not anything direct right up against the glass, you know, where it's direct sun. But just as much light as possible. My aunt used to be able to take care of Boston ferns.
Like nobody's business.
Mm-hmm. I will commend her on that.
Well, I have to tell you, the ones down at Jackson are always looking stellar.
Those are grown for us, especially for us, specifically for us. And they are, and they're not root bound. Like you'll find a lot of those Boston ferns at some places.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to accommodate and take on the moisture. When they're root bound, you better bump them up because you can't give them enough water.
Nice.
So it's not difficult at all to bring plants in.
Yep. And that you were right about Boston ferns inside. They tend to drop some leaves or foliage, I guess you should say. But, and a lot of people will go, oh, no, it's dead. That's not it. It just has to go through that dormant season, I guess, and then it rebounds nicely.
No, and, you know, sometimes if something gets really ratty looking, uh-huh. Give it a haircut.
Trim her up.
They'll come back. Wait them out. You know, but yeah. It's always, what do you have to lose if you bring something indoors? You don't have anything to lose. If you don't bring them indoors to give it a shot,
right.
Then, you know, you're not going on there.
You're not worried about that.
Right.
You know, 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Lots of ways to stay connected with us. We want to remind you to jump onto our Facebook page. We get a lot of great pictures. And you can pose questions to us, and we'll get those answered for you. And we're going to be revisiting a conversation we had last week, a great piece of information about the basement and how to keep a nice dry basement.
That's always important, especially during the spring months and late fall, winter months,
and
when we get a lot of moisture.
We also have Tina on the line. When we come back, we'll go to Tina first before we visit the... Oh, you want to talk to her now? Okay, Tony, we have Tina on the line who's got a question for you about transplanting down in Warsaw. What are you transplanting down in Warsaw, Tina?
Well, I'm not really transplanting. I'm repotting it. I have a cactus.
Uh-huh.
It's a rat tail cactus.
Okay.
And it's old. This thing's probably 15 years old.
Cool. Yeah.
And I don't think it's got any dirt left in the pot.
What size pot is it in now, Tina?
Oh, it has to be in a hanging pot.
It has to be in a hanging pot. Okay. Do you know the diameter of the pot?
No, currently? It's pretty good size.
Okay.
I mean, I can split it in half,
mm-hmm.
But the thing is this thing will reach out and bite you.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you, it when you work with some of the cacti or cactuses like that, you'll end up with all kinds of little prick marks on your hands or your wrist or your arm.
So, my husband's pretty good about carrying plants in and out for me every spring and fall, but he hates it.
You know, sometimes, as hokey as this might sound, and it's something we don't talk about often, you know, you can buy those rose gloves that go way up the arm, up to the elbow.
Oh, okay.
And work with some things. You know, there's various styles. There's some that are really thick. There's some that are a little thinner, but which makes working with your fingers and the dexterity of a lot easier.
Okay.
So, you know, those might be some options when you're working with this particular guy.
It's long. This thing,
mm-hmm.
It hangs probably 4 feet long.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a nice specimen right there.
And I have a feeling it's not blooming because it doesn't have enough dirt.
That could be. You know, they go through bloom cycles. And I don't know a lot about the bloom cycles when it comes to cactus. But when you pot this up, if you transplant it into another size pot, you know, just for example, you know, you said it's in a hanging basket. A lot of times you'll see 8-inch hanging baskets. You'll see 10-inch hanging baskets, 12-inch, 14-inch, etc. Just go up to the next size and be sure to use a cactus soil, something that gives you really good drainage. That's so important.
I thought about getting the same size it's in, but then just trying to divide it.
That's a good idea. Well, if you're going to divide it, then, you know, take the pieces out of it and go down to a smaller hanging basket.
Okay.
You know, for example, if it's in a 10-inch basket and you get three pieces, maybe use 3 6-inch hanging baskets.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's only bloomed a few times. This is one that my mom just couldn't wait to see bloom, and she passed before it did.
Mm-hmm.
And a month after that, I was talking to her and telling her I wanted to see that thing bloom, and it bloomed in September.
Wow.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's
this is kind of a special plant to me.
Sure. And always, you know, working with things like that and dividing things is really important. You know, and I can't honestly answer this. There's some plants are monocarpic. They bloom one time, and that's usually it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure this particular cactus, but that might be something worth looking into.
And, no, actually, they do bloom. It has bloomed a few times,
yeah.
But it hasn't bloomed in the last 2 years. And I think it's because it needs to be transplanted.
Well, sometimes division, too, keeps plants vigorous. And doing that, you know, that does promote some bloom, you know, and better growth.
Off and giving them away, I can't tell you how many pieces I've cut off of there.
Awesome.
And that seems to help. It's creating more growth from the base of it.
No, just I would go ahead and take some pieces off of it, get a little bit of cactus soil, some smaller pots, and do the division.
Well, I think I'll do that. It's just hard to work with. I'm afraid I'm going to get stuck in a million places.
Well, that's where those gloves that kind of go up the arm towards the elbow, like the rose gloves, okay. That's going to make it a little easier to deal with.
Other than that, I was going to put on a heavy, thick jacket and welding gloves.
There you go.
and a welding mask, maybe. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
Well, take pictures and let us know.
Yeah, let us know how it goes. Yeah, and good luck to you. Don't get caught up in it. All right.
I know. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, going to revisit a conversation we had with Bobby Miles from the Basement Doctor. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Bobby Miles with us, owner of Basement Doctor. We've been solving a lot of problems and getting educated on some of the issues and how to correct that basement problem. And really, that has got to be priority one for homeowners to get that fixed and get the problems, A, for your health. But great news, we were talking in the break, that all the estimates are free.
Absolutely.
And tell us a little bit, too, about your certified inspectors and everybody that comes into the home to work on your house.
Well, to run a good company, right, you have to be properly trained. So to be in sales, we train you. We go through all of that to make sure that, you know, our people know what they're looking at and what's going to solve their issues. So not only do that with ourselves, we do it with our installers, too. Our foreman and his co-foreman, all of that have to go through, you know, 2 or 3 weeks of training before we ever put them in the field.
Great. And all of the people that come to the house are your employees?
Absolutely. Yep. We don't subcontract anything.
That's great news.
That's good to know.
Yeah. Is everyone that comes from the initial visit to the inspection to the work to the punch out or the finished product are all Basement Doctor employees? And all too often, homeowners will get in a situation where they hire someone to fix a problem in their home, and then someone different shows up, and then they bring a friend of theirs, and you just don't know about that. But that's not an issue with the Basement Doctor.
No, we get letters back all the time, you know, of people thanking us for doing exactly what we said we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
From start to finish, you know. We have a wow factor in our company that we like to exceed our customers' expectations.
Mm-hmm. You know, the first thing to pop into my mind a few minutes ago when you and Tony were talking on the air about how everybody thinks that primarily the roof is the most important part of the house, but it's not. If you don't have a good foundation, a roof doesn't mean a hill of beans, you know.
Well, you know, if you don't have a foundation, I have a home, right?
That's exactly right.
That's right.
That's exactly right. So tell us a couple of things, and let's refresh a couple of things that we talked about earlier in your visit. What are the first things homeowners need to look for?
Well, there's lots of different things. You know, one, if you're walking around the outside of your house and you're seeing stair step cracking in your brick or your foundation, that's an immediate sign that you need to call, you know, to have it inspected, have it looked at.
Mm-hmm. So, especially in the fall, we're always telling our listeners to get out and to walk around your property, to inspect your home and to take a look. What are some of the signs that they should be looking for?
Well, in a basement, you know, if you're starting to smell a musty odor or something like that, that's water infiltrusion into a basement.
Uh-huh.
Just because you don't have it 3 inches of water in your basement doesn't mean that you're not getting water in your basement. So, you know, if you're starting to smell those musty odors, something like that, that's a good sign to call.
Mm-hmm.
Have someone come and look at it. There again, it's free, right? So it doesn't cost you anything but your time to have us come out, let us know what the problem is or what kind of problems you're having, and let us give you a solution to fix it.
What's an inspector going to do when he arrives at the house?
Well, we inspect inside and outside. Mm-hmm. Right? So not only do we go and look at the basement or the crawl space, but we go outside. So we want to look for downspout lines. We want to make sure downspouts aren't just dropping beside the house. Those need to be away from the house, you know, a minimum of 10 feet. You know, that's one thing.
So you can, I don't mean to interrupt you there, but image just popped into my mind. You can see somebody's got a downspout and they run up to the big box and put a 90 on it and think, oh, I'm done. And all they're doing is creating a problem bigger than they need.
But you know what?
That's
what they did to my house when I bought my house. It's back to what you said. Downspout comes down. They put a 90 on it. Oh, it's good.
Hey,
it's done.
Let's go, Bill. We're finished.
Or what about that fancy one that fills up and rolls out and comes back, I guess, after it quits raining? You ever seen those?
Yeah, flexible. I've never seen any of them work.
Yeah, exactly right. They never work.
No, that's a fact.
They look better on the shelf.
Yep.
So there's a minimum.
In the air.
So what do you recommend to homeowners? How far away? What's that minimum to get the water away from your home with the downspout?
I'd like to go, you know, 7 to 10 feet.
Yeah, that's good news.
Well, because, you know, when they put your basement in, they excavated around it, you know, 4 to 5 feet out. So that's not virgin soil anymore.
Right.
Okay. So that's where the water will go to the most is right there. So if you've got them just dumping right beside your house, where's all that water going?
It's going right down to the footing. Yeah. That's interesting.
You know, if you found yourself or your staff in situations where somebody might say, hey, come on out here and take a look at this, and you send a crew out, and, you know, you evaluate the situation, and then all of a sudden, it's like, you know, they put it off. So those situations, when they put it off, it's
well,
not
again,
going...
what do we say, right? It only leaks when it rains.
Right. It's not going away, so... And it only festers and becomes more of a problem. And then even, you know, worse, more of a cost associated with the correction.
Yeah, it's not going to go away.
We
know that. You know that. So, you know, it's going to happen again. It's going to keep happening again.
Yeah.
And it's going to get worse. And that's what you don't want to do. There's a point of no return, like in a structure repair issue.
Mm-hmm.
When you have to underpin a house or fix a bowed wall or something like that. If you let it go too long, there is a point of no return. Well, all you can do is just stabilize it
right. And
make sure that it doesn't move any farther. You know, on a bowing wall or a bulging wall, you know, you may wake up, we may get a lot of rain, and you may wake up in the middle of the night, we hear a big boom.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wall collapsing in. You know, we've had that happen. We've had people that said, you know what? I'm going to hold off for now, and then 2 or 3 months later, they call us back to come back out there, and the whole wall's caved in. We can't do anything at that point.
Wow. No.
So your fix just went from, you know, a small amount of money to a huge amount of money,
right?
And insurance companies don't pay for that.
They don't pay for that. You're absolutely right. That was my next statement. You know, when you run into those situations, and now it doesn't seem like when it rains, it's like what it used to be. It's all or nothing. It's 2 inches in an hour or what have you. Then all of a sudden, that hydrostatic pressure, it's there. And it's a problem.
Yeah, you have to, you know, think about something. Because of the clay soils that we have are so expansive, if it can raise a house up, right?
Yeah.
Then when it's dry, you can only imagine what's going to happen when it's going to sink, right?
Yeah.
So... keeping those soils hydrated when it's really, really dry is a huge plus, especially in Cincinnati and northern Kentucky.
Right. Because we're
we have a lot of clay. There's no doubt about it.
That we do. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Bobby Miles from the Basement Doctor in with us. We need to pause for a moment. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation. And a couple of things you need to make sure that you check out before we get too deep into the season. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Holly on the line from Dover, Kentucky. And she's got a question about bringing in her elephant ear. Holly, do you have a on speakerphone by any chance?
I do, but I'll take you off.
Okay, that'd be great because all we can hear is the background.
Okay, how about that?
Perfect. That's perfect. Thank you.
Good.
So you want to bring in your elephant ear? You had a question about that?
Yeah, well, my I guess the main question would be, do I have to bring it in, or can I leave it out over the winter?
You have to bring it in.
Okay.
Yeah, and you'll definitely risk losing it.
Okay. And so I just, it's good size. It was very small when I got it this spring, but it has grown enormously.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yes, and it's beautiful. It's got these, I don't know what it is coming out of it. Some kind of shoot, but I don't know if they turn into a leaf or if it's not sure what it is. It's got like this little bulby thing, and then it has this yellow something coming out of it, yellow.
Yeah, it's some other type of growth that they'll put on. But is yours in a pot or is it in the ground?
It's in the ground.
It's in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I would do is allow a frost or two frost to get to it, and it'll start to yellow off. If it hasn't already, you know, one of mine in a pot, you know, an elephant ear that I have in a pot now, it's starting to get a little cool at night. You know, I'm starting to see just a little bit of yellowing in it, but obviously things are going to behave differently in containers versus what's in the ground.
Right.
Because the ground's still a lot warmer than with some of the soils that are in pots. You know, what you want to do is allow the frost get to it a couple of times. And then you're going to lift it. And when you lift it, I want you to dig around that bulb, you know, where the main stalk comes up. And go out several inches around that bulb and spade down and lift it and cut most of the foliage back. Don't go all the way to, don't cut it back all the way to the bulb itself. I want you to leave a little bit of that intact, but I want you to allow it to dry out for a little bit. And then, you know, let it dry out in the shade, and then you can take the rest of the soil away from it. You can cut the roots and then go ahead and store it in a cool, dry place.
Oh.
Now, sometimes people will use a little bit of peat moss and just ever so slightly moisten it. And just store it that way, maybe like in a crate or something where air gets to it. Now, here's what else is important, too, when you're storing bulbs for the winter months. Don't store them and forget about them. Take it upon yourself to just check them monthly, because you don't want them to get soft as because of too much moisture with the peat. And you don't want any soft spots on it. And you also don't want them to get too dry and get brittle. So just you want to keep that fine line between the two, it getting too dry or staying wet. And it might stay more towards the dry side usually. But just inspect it, you know, monthly and make sure the bulb is nice and firm.
And I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Storing it in the peat moss now, would that be like in the house or the basement?
In the basement. In the basement, yeah.
Okay.
You know, and you'll just, you know, peat moss, typically when you buy it, it's dry. You'll just, you know, and that's the beauty of it. You can just moisten it just a little bit, but not too much. And just check the bulb, you know, check it monthly. That's what's important. A lot of times people will forget about the bulbs. And if it's too dry, a lot of the bulbs, they'll shrivel up as a result of being too dry. And they become really, really brittle, and they're not worth the hoot the following season.
Okay. And the other question, I guess, would be, can I just put it in a pot and bring it in the house over the winter?
You certainly can do that as well.
Okay.
Many people will store it that way. You know, again, when you lift it, spade, you know, give it some room, because, you know, is it pretty large? How tall is it, or how wide is it?
I would say it's at least 3 feet tall.
Yeah, it's pretty big.
Yeah, it's really grown a lot.
Right. And in most cases like that, you can certainly put it in a large pot, mm-hmm. but cut all the foliage back and leave like one stem or one stalk.
Okay.
And if anything new tries to come up subsequent to that after you prune it back, just always try and keep one leaf and always keep an eye on that leaf to make sure you don't have any insect issues. And usually if you have any insect issues with elephant ears inside, it's spider mite. So mm-hmm. just look for real fine webbing on the leaf. But that's other than that, they're relatively easy to care for. And I think putting them in a pot and treating them as such is easier than just allowing them to dry out, cutting the stem and some of the roots back to that bulb and storing them in peat moss. I think it's easier to do it in a container. That's me personally.
Okay.
And then next year, and they're very sensitive to soil temperatures when you take them back outside.
Uh-huh.
So keep that in mind. You know, and the beauty of it being in a container, if you, on nice warm days, you can start getting them acclimated outside. And then if there's going to be a call for colder temperatures or a frost or a late spring frost, uh-huh. You can bring them in for the evening and then take them back out. It kind of gives you a jump on the growing season. That is why I like to keep them in containers. And uh-huh. they're going to get a lot bigger next year than they are this year. You're going to enjoy them. They're awesome.
Okay. Yeah, I love it. I love watching it and how it just grows so quickly.
And if you ever get an opportunity, the uprights are just as stunning. You know, they don't lay out and have that larger appearance where they're wider. They just mm-hmm. stay more upright. Really cool.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Keep us in
show.
Thank you. Let us know how it goes, all right?
All right, I sure will. Thank you.
You're
have
welcome.
A great day.
You too. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Tony, we have Missy on the line from Western Hills. Got a question about repotting an orchid plant. Hi, Missy.
Yes.
Thank you so much for holding on.
Hi, thank you.
Uh-huh. So how big is your orchid plant?
I'd say about 12 inches or so. It's not that big. It's just the roots that uh-huh. are kind of coming out and growing down everywhere. I didn't really expect it to last this long, but I've had mm-hmm. it for several years now.
Oh, cool. No, orchids, you know, there's a little myth about orchids. A lot of people think that they're difficult to take care of, and they mm-hmm. really aren't.
No.
And you just, you know, you kind of, you know, made reference to that because you've had it for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's really important when you transplant or repot an orchid into another pot, first and foremost, try and find an orchid pot that will accommodate it, you know, the size of it when you in fact transplant it.
Okay.
And what's really important too is to use an orchid bark mix. You know, you'll have a little bit of charcoal in there. You'll have a barky mix. And the purpose of that is it allows air to get to those roots. Those roots that you're talking about, especially on mm-hmm. top, mm-hmm. don't bury those. Leave those out when you repot it. Those roots are there for a purpose. And what they're doing, they're reaching out and they're pulling moisture out of the humidity in the air.
Okay. And some of them they are kind of dropping down from my kind of kitchen sink area. So some of those are at least 4 to 5 inches long. So leave those out
yes.
as well.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And a little tip, you know, I don't know what kind of pot you're going to use or repot it in. I always like to just occasionally keep a saucer on hand, and I'll just mm-hmm. layer the bottom of that saucer or that saucer with a little bit of stone
mm-hmm.
and just put a little bit of water there
okay.
in that saucer. And I don't try and find one that's glazed so it doesn't leak. You know, if you're
okay.
going to use a clay saucer, or some of the clay saucers have a glaze to the inside of them, and some don't. The ones that
okay.
do not, you know, water will wick through that, and it might mark or mar something, a surface or your floor. But you know, something that will hold moisture, and when you put that underneath, you know, put the pot on the saucer with the gravel and the water, it mm-hmm. creates a lot more moisture and humidity.
Okay.
They like that.
And how much bigger should I go? Because it's been in the same pot that I've had it for years, and I just almost feel bad that the roots have to go everywhere else.
That's okay. You know,
okay.
you don't want to put it in too big of a pot. Just go up to the next size. For example,
okay.
if it's in a 6-inch pot,
mm-hmm.
go to a 7 or an 8-inch pot. Just gradually go up.
Okay.
Don't put it in something really large where it just gets swallowed up.
Yeah.
That's when people get in trouble, because then, especially with other types of plants, that's why that bark mix is so important, because it doesn't hold moisture as long.
Okay.
And it allows air, like I said, to get to those air roots.
Okay.
But this is what I like. Go to one of your local garden centers or nurseries that's close to you. Most of us carry special bark mixes for orchids, and also special formulated fertilizers for orchids. Is it in bloom right now, or is it out of bloom?
It's getting ready to, yes.
Okay.
Getting
ready to. But before you, now, and I almost forgot to ask you that, before you do anything, allow it to go through its bloom cycle.
Okay.
Because you don't want to disturb that. And, we don't want to shock it. After it's finished blooming, then that's when I want you to repot it.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And next up, Tony, we have Rose from Norwood on the line. She's got cactus question for you. Or I should say cacti. How many do you have? Hi, Rose.
Oh, hi. I had got quite a few of them, and I was listening to the woman who called, and I didn't catch what kind that she had.
A rat tail.
Oh, they're beautiful.
They are, and they can really be, they can prick you pretty good, too. That's why I was telling her to wear gloves when she's working with it.
Yeah, and I can give her a couple of other tips. Since it's 4 foot long, what you can do is take a piece of newspaper, notebook paper, anything, and you accordion for it, and you make a band with it.
Okay.
So what you do is you accordion fold this thing, and you've got a couple layers of this paper by the time you're done doing that. And you've made a band.
Okay.
And you can put the band around the cactus and lift it up out of there.
Okay, that's a good idea. That's what the show's all about, like just tips like that.
I'm really good with cactus, but I'll tell you something a lot of people don't realize is that you don't have to touch those cactus to get pricked or to get spines in you, because the static from your body will draw them out.
Really?
Hmm. Yes.
Okay.
I hadn't heard that.
Like, if you've got one anywhere, if you stand near it or move around near it, and then all of a sudden you've got spines in you, and the reason being is because you got too close to it.
See, that's why I don't hang out with cactus or know that much about cactus, because I don't want to get pricked.
Well,
but or poked, or however you want to term it as being.
Yeah,
but,
and I know that there are other potting mixes out there. It used to be Schultz was the only one who had one for cactus, but I think Miracle-Gro carries them now, too.
Mm-hmm.
But you want something that is specifically for cactus or succulents.
Yeah, definitely. Something that provides great drainage. One that I've really liked a lot in recent years is from SunGrow, and it's a cactus mix, and I've been very pleased with it. I like the texture and consistency of it. But, definitely look for a cactus mix when you're transplanting. It's important.
Another reason that may not have flowered is it might not have... Well, you are correct. Some of them don't bloom every year. But, if that one was blooming and it didn't bloom this year, it might have been lack of nutrients, which Schultz also carries a liquid
There's a cactus
feed.
Food, yeah. Yeah, you're starting to see more of those kind of specialized items now available. But
it used to be they were very hard to come by. There was a point when I was mixing my own soils. But when she repots that, probably put peat moss in the bottom of it, and then a little bit of charcoal, and then put... the potting soil in there. Also, the roots on cactus are a lot different. They have a tap root, which is a real long root that goes way down deep because that's where the water is in their natural habitat.
No, that's interesting to know. Hey, cactus are really cool. They're starting to gain popularity again.
They sure are. And also, I think they've resurged because succulents are becoming so popular, which is another thing I've always been fascinated with.
Yeah, succulents are, I agree with you that everybody's looking for those now. Well, that's a great tip, Rose. Always good to hear from you. And that's what the show's built upon and all about, are people like yourself that call in who have experienced with different things. And you have a wonderful weekend, okay?
Thanks, too.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Tony, we have Chris on the line who has got a question about bringing elephant ears inside. We sort of hit on something that everybody's got a question about this morning, which is fantastic. Hi, Chris. Thanks for hanging on.
Hi, how are you?
Wonderful, wonderful. How big is your elephant ear plant?
Oh, my elephant ears are so beautiful. But I have a problem. Somebody told me to dig them up before Halloween.
Oh, Did they say why? I mean, typically, by the time we reach Halloween, we've already had a frost or two. And that could change from year to year. So you want a frost or two to get to them. Now, is yours in the... Well, you said yours... Obviously, you said dig them up, so they're in the ground, correct?
Correct.
Well, how old are... Is this your first year having them?
Oh, no.
Now, let me ask you this. What have you done in years past? How have you treated your elephant ears?
I just put them in the ground and put Miragrow around them, and they are so beautiful.
Well, what did you do to store them last year?
I put them in my basement.
Okay. Did you dig them up and put them in a pot and take them to the basement, or did you lift those?
I put them in a garbage bag.
Uh-huh.
And took them downstairs in the basement.
Okay.
But then again, like February, they was already blooming in the bag.
Oh, they were trying to put on some growth. Yeah, you want to prevent that if you can, but that's not uncommon sometimes. You know, you may see that. And always inspect those, like, monthly going through the winter months, because you want to make sure they're not getting too dry or they're staying wet. And in the bag, I guess you didn't seal it. You left it open, correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, everybody has a little different approach. You know, I say it all the time. There's not one right way to do things all the time or a wrong way. If we were to leave from here to go to Florida, we can go by train, plane, automobile, or whatever. There's still a way to get from A to B. And
right.
You storing it that way worked really well for you, and that's awesome. That's why I was wanting to ask what your method was.
Okay. And then I have another question. I got a J plant.
Uh-huh.
And... It was gave to me as a gift,
mm-hmm.
and it's been in the same pot ever since they gave it to me, and that was last year.
Okay.
Now, a J plant is really hard to grow, I think.
Okay, go ahead.
But I don't know if I should feed it Miragrow or what.
Well, you're going to hear it straight from me right now. I'm not a big Miracle-Gro fan. I have nothing against Miracle-Gro. I prefer other types of fertilizers, and you have to be really careful with the type of fertilizers that you're using, especially those that are very high in nitrogen.
Right.
You know, I steer away from those kind of things. Now, you know, having said that, you know, the thing about the jade plant is that, you know, it too is a succulent, and anything that's a succulent has real thick, fleshy leaves. And those fleshy leaves hold a lot of moisture. And given that, you also have to be aware of how much moisture, how often you're watering your plants, your succulents, or how little. They will shrivel and start giving you problems if they're not getting enough moisture. So
right.
You have to be very diligent about how you're watering those kind of things. And the succulent plant, or the jade plant itself, they're very long-lived. There are a lot of people who have had those for years in the family. A lot of people come into the garden center and say, hey, my grandma had this for years and she gave it to me. You know, it's just properly taking care of those things. Make sure that you're using soil, which is so important. It has great drainage. That's key. Also, usually the only insect that I see that really plagues jade plants are mealybug. And a lot of times, you got to be careful with what you spray on the jade plant, because you can experience some phytotoxicity with the products that you're spraying with. And I always like to take a Q-tip and dip it into a little bit of rubbing alcohol and just go in there and clean out and get that mealybug off of it. But going back to the fertilization, you know, they're coming out with fertilizers for succulents that are very low in nitrogen, and
right.
You might want to think about that. You know, some of those other fertilizers that are available today that you mix with water and so forth are very high in salts. And when you see that white, crusty stuff, you know, on the top layer of your pots and plants, you know what I'm talking about?
Uh-huh.
Sometimes that's an indication that the fertilizers that you're using are high in salts, you know. And that's an indicator that you need to replant some things and clean that soil up.
Right, but I don't have that problem. And then the pot that it's been in,
yeah,
it don't have a drainage.
Oh, that right there could be the kiss of death. So you have to be even better and just at your watering techniques, and just know how much it needs. Every pot should have a drainage hole. I don't care what anyone says.
Right, that's what I thought.
Yeah, and also, it's probably in a plastic pot.
No, it's in a clay pot.
Without a drainage hole.
Without a draining hole, yeah.
Well, I would definitely keep it in clay. I like clay because if you have, if you're one of those people that sometimes has a tendency to overwater, clay wicks moisture away and allows that soil to breathe. So I would bump it up to the next size pot. Do not put anything too large and go from there with it.
Okay. Well, I thank you. You answered all my questions for me.
All right. We have a wonderful weekend.
You should. Oh, no. You didn't tell me when to dig them up, though.
After you get a frost or two on the elephant ear, that's when I would lift it.
Like, say, in November?
No. It just depends. I don't know when we're going to have the average frost date is usually October 15th or beyond, the third or fourth week of October. You know, it's all weather related. Just when we have a frost or two.
I just listen.
Yeah, just, you'll see a frost out there on it, trust me. You're okay. Just do what you've been doing.
You've been doing well.
Yeah, you've been doing very well.
All right.
Have a great weekend. Bye.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've got a couple of other things we're going to be covering about getting you ready for fall. We're going to talk about lawn and aeration and when and where and how to do it. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Going to be a great weekend to get some stuff done outside before it turns cool. It's not going to be like it was this past week. High temperatures are only going to be in the 60s. Overnight lows in the 50s tonight and then 40s for Sunday and Monday. So we've been talking about getting some plants inside or at least getting started on it. And it kind of starts with checking them to make sure you're not bringing any passengers along.
Yeah, passengers. Do you have a passenger list for that plant that you're bringing
That's
inside?
Right. Yeah.
Well, who would that be? It might be Mr. Aphid or Mr. Mealybug. But certainly, we've had some great calls this morning, about bringing some things indoors. And it's that time of year. You know, it's the fall season. And obviously, you know, if we want to keep some of these plants that have been thriving on our patios or our decks or front porches, it's certainly time to start considering, you know, what you need to do to bring them in. And, one of those things is checking for passengers, insects. Make sure that you properly treat those plants or go after those insects before you bring them indoors. You know, you don't want that affecting some of your other stuff that's inside.
Yeah.
Because it would just be one nightmare and be one heck of a problem through the winter months.
Mm-hmm.
And the systemic products, Bonide makes a systemic granular product that you just sprinkle on top of the surface of the soil. I like it a lot. It's just a nice little container. And it gives you, X number of days of protection from a systemic standpoint. And when you water that product, it gets into the plant via the root system, goes up into the plant. And when the insects feed on the plant, guess what?
Chicken butt?
Like, zzz. Yeah, it's like that bug zapper. So it's very, very effective. Also, look for triple action from Fertilume. It's got a little bit of neem oil in it. It's a fungicide, insecticide, and miticide. That's another great product to spray your plants with. And remember, too, the spraying underneath the foliage, that is so important. That's where all the insect activity is. That's where the party is.
That's right.
It's where it's happening.
That's right.
Another good product, too, is Bayer's 3-in-1. That, too, is a systemic, and it also kills on contact. So any of those approaches will work perfect for you before you bring your plants indoors. And if you don't want to go that route, you want to stay a little bit on the organic side or the natural side, then use a little bit of dishwashing detergent, mix it with a pint of water, and spray that on your plants. Or you can purchase an insecticidal soap. And these products I'm talking about, you can get these really, rather easily at your local garden centers and nurseries. Stop in your local garden center and nursery. Say, hey, I have plans on bringing some plants in. What do you have for me that will make this work without me bringing in or introducing little pesky invaders, passengers, as you called them, which I liked a lot.
Yep. Lisa had another question for you.
No, Lisa's already asked all her questions. I'm sorry, Lisa.
She wanted to know about a young lilac bush that she has in a big pot that she wants to take down to the farm. And she said, her question is, should we put it in the garage for the winter, or how should we approach that? She wants to save the plant, take it to the farm in the spring, and replant it.
So she wants to keep it in a container before she plants it down at the farm.
To transport it down.
Well, this is, I have another question. You know, well, I have a question for Lisa. Is this, is she going to be going to the farm at any point in time between now and the end of October?
Probably not. It probably is going to be a spring visit.
And it's a hardy lilac shrub, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would try and plant it. I would try and just make a road trip and plant it. Now, if not...
Oh, don't give her an excuse to go to the farm. She'll be down there.
Aren't you looking for like a weekend pass? Didn't you tell me that?
No, I didn't tell you that, but I'll take it.
I would try and plant it this fall.
Okay.
I really would. However, if that's not going to happen or be the case, then, you know, if it's in a container, bring it into the garage, you know, right. Give it as much light as possible. You know, things like that are tough to take care of, but it can be taken care of properly.
Right.
You're going to back off your watering. You definitely don't want to fertilize. You don't want to encourage new growth. You might prune it back a little bit. And two, you want to check it, make sure you're not bringing in any insects by chance.
Okay. But the smart thing would be to make a road trip down to the farm.
I would because, you know, planting in the fall is the best time to plant, especially trees and shrubs and so forth. Mm-hmm. So given that window of opportunity, the beauty of it is once that lilac starts to lose its foliage,
right.
You know, it's still rooting in. Okay. And it's going to make it a better and stronger plant the following season.
I gotcha.
And, you know, pruning it back, bringing it inside, you know, I would do that. But the problem is you're going to cut off some bloom buds for the next season.
Okay.
You know, so it's kind of like you got to decide which avenue you want to take.
Sure.
And then travel that avenue and just deal with it.
Yeah, the reason why we want to keep it alive and then get it down there is because these all came from the lilac bush in our yard.
Yeah.
And some have grown into the neighbor's yard. They love it and take great care of it.
Right.
And then when we had the construction work that we had to get done, we had to move it and we were able to save some of it. So now mm-hmm. we want to take a little bit of our plant down to our farm and put it in the ground.
Well, you know, there's another option as I think about this a little more. Is you can just plant it in your yard and lift it in the spring and take it down.
I'm sure she'd much rather go to the farm for the weekend.
I would just go ahead and identify the location where you want to plant it, prep the soil as needed, and plant it. Yeah. You could heal it in your own yard, so to speak. Yeah, I mean, there's some people will plant it in a pot and all.
Yeah, I just got a text from her, said road trip sounds fine to me.
There you go, road trip. You got a weekend pass.
I do. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you jump on our Facebook page. A fantastic way to stay connected with us. You can post pictures, post questions, and you can email us to inandaroundthehouse@b105.com. Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, we need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. A little madness, our house, bringing us into this segment. We're talking about your house and populating it with all the plants that you love that are outside now. Want to make sure you check them for bugs and diseases. Treat them before you bring them back in. And Tony, we have Kim on the line from Independence, mm-hmm. my old hometown. Got a question about trimming a Miss Kim lilac. Is it called Miss Kim because you own it, Kim, or is that the brand?
No, it is.
Oh, yes.
There is a Miss Kim.
Right. Okay. It's a dwarf, and I really liked that when I got it. But I got it, like, in April, and I called you guys before and talked about, like, the leaves have been curling. I mean, mm-hmm. it's been horrible looking all summer. And now, it's got all these buds on it everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere. It looks like, I thought it was dead. I mean, it looked horrible. It didn't do anything. No growth or anything on it all summer. And now it's got, every branch has like a ton of buds on it.
Perfect. Leave her alone.
Leave Kim alone.
Yes. You know, it's one of my favorite dwarf lilacs, to be honest with you, because I do like the foliage. Sometimes, Kim, the Miss Kim lilac, you know, depending upon the summer and how hot it gets, you know, the foliage can kind of be a turnoff, a drawback.
Yeah, it looks horrible.
I know, and I remembered the call.
Oh,
and
gosh.
And you know, sometimes too, if they're in areas that there's not a lot of good proper air circulation around it, mm-hmm. you know, you can see a little bit of powdery mildew. So make sure that you provide, you know, ample room around your lilac. Don't prune it now because she's going to give you some beautiful blooms this upcoming spring season. Okay. And that's going to make you really like her even more.
What about in the winter? I mean, it sits on the corner of, like, my garage, and it gets a lot of wind. Is there, like, to cover it in, like, really cold, cold days? Could I do something like that?
No, just let Mother Nature do her thing.
Okay.
Yeah, they're resilient, you know.
Okay.
I mean, true, if it's a brutal, brutal winter, things can, you know, odd things can take place or happen. But for the most part, no. It's very resilient and hardy.
All righty, great. But, well, I'm glad to hear it. I'm glad it's not dead.
No.
I'm glad now that I see the buds.
And I love the testimonial that you just gave in regards to it, because you saw it struggling. And, you know, the first year, a lot of times plants, they're trying to get acclimated, you know, and you know, they'll show some signs of, you know, like I'm struggling or I'm not feeling well, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, what you just talked about, you're seeing the buds and all that good stuff.
Beautiful.
Those are key indicators that all is well.
Good. Okay.
And allow it to do its thing. And next year, I want you to follow up with us. If we don't hear from you between now and then, you know, let us know what you think of the bloom production.
All the time. Every time there's a problem, I gotta call Tony.
Wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Okay, great. Thanks, guys.
All right.
Have a great weekend.
You do the same.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
See ya. 749 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. That's a great question about that, because that's one of the things you worry about is what's going on. It doesn't look healthy, but that's not necessarily the case. It's just going into a cycle and then it'll come back out.
Sure, things,
and look,
you know,
good.
There's an old saying, the first year they sleep, the second year plants creep, and the third year they leap. And, you know, once plants get rooted in, things, you know, dynamically, things start to change both below the soil surface and above. And that's when you start really getting the enjoyment of what a plant is capable of giving you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about patience. You know, it's just not going to happen overnight. And once, you know, it's like watching your kids grow up.
Mm-hmm.
You know more about that than I, because I don't have kids, but I'm trying to make that analogy.
Sure.
And For everyone out there who had some issues this year with some plants that were newly planted, and you saw issues, you know, it may have been where there was leaf drop, or some of the leaves became marred or discolored with different issues. You know, it might mm-hmm. be powdery mildew or some fungus of some sort.
A fungus among us.
But, you know, if you're ever in question about a shrub or a tree or anything of the sort, just simply take your fingernail or your pocket knife and just gently scrape back the outer skin of the stems. And don't just do one, do several. If there's green underneath that stem, there's a lot of life there.
Mm-hmm.
And also start looking for bud development. Just as Kim was saying, she's seeing all these buds. You know, that could be leaf buds. Those could be the bloom buds, a number of different things. So don't just discard something because it doesn't appear to be what it should be.
Right.
Be patient. You know, I can't say it enough. This year especially, and I hate to really hone in on this, we always say, well, it's always weather related. It is. You know, it's the environment.
Sure.
This year was brutal. It was one of the humidity levels that we experienced with those high temperatures just created a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm.
And something that Bob Bard and I was talking about the other day when we were golfing. And Bob's a great fan of the show. They have a wonderful nursery there at Bard's Nursery. You know, we were talking about next year. We seem to think, you know, just things have been so strange in the lawn. We're going to see a lot of weed issues, I think.
Yeah, I think
everything just set up to be such. And we had a lot of the rain there in July. And, you know, that also, when you get a lot of moisture, that kind of reduces the effectiveness of some of the pre-emergent products that we have on our lawns or those in our landscape beds. And that's why we're always encouraging people, you know, take it another step further. You know, put down dimension in your landscape beds. Do it a couple times a year. Do it late summer. You're going to keep a lot of things out of the lawn and out of your landscape beds.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And mentioning your lawn, we're also going to be talking a little bit about aerating your lawn and an easy way to do it, when and how often you should be aerating. We need to pause. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground today. It's going to be a beautiful weekend to get some stuff done. It'll feel a little bit like fall out there, too. High temperatures expected to be in the 60s. And then tonight and overnight low will be 53. But then on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, overnight lows will be in the 40s. So that's why we're talking about getting some of your plants ready to come inside. But we also don't want to ignore our lawns. And this is where normally a lot of people will start to thinking about aeration and reseeding the lawn. So Tony's gonna set you straight.
I thought you were. Lay it out
there. Stand and deliver.
I'll certainly do that. You know, when it comes to the lawn, there's a couple of things I want to touch base on, and one is the Fertilum three-step program. And we talk about it often, and if you've yet to do it or you want to try it, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up the Lawn Food Plus Iron. That is one of the first of the two applications for the fall season.
Mm-hmm.
And getting into this three-step approach, the fall is the best time. It really is. And I can't say it enough because it sets the stage for the following spring season. And fertilizing your lawn this time of the year, I don't care what you do throughout the rest of the season, but the two fall applications are the most important. And one being we have cool season grasses. This is what's important about fertilizing in the fall, is that we get this burst of growth. You know, the energy is there and the turf start to take off. And by fertilizing, what we're doing, we're strengthening our turf. We're helping it, you know, get thicker. It's becoming healthier. And it's building up these energy reserves with carbohydrates and sugars.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a proven fact. The following spring, after fall fertilizations, that our grass, our turf will green up quicker. And also, it's a healthier lawn. It's building a lot of momentum to take us into the next season. So get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Ask for the Fertilum product. Get with those professionals and staff members and just ask them, you know, what are the benefits? You know, how do I do this? And if you do not have a spreader, we're more than willing to loan you one. We often loan out our spreader at Jackson Florist and Garden Center for people who want to try it for the very first time. So get that fertilization down if you haven't already. What's important, we need to come back and do that second fall application in the middle of November. And the critical point of interest here is that we need 6 weeks in between those two applications. And just make it happen. Don't put it off. And you're going to be rewarded with it next year. In addition to that, I also like to take the opportunity throughout the month of October to aerate the lawn. There's a lot of great benefits to aerating the lawn. You know, one, it improves our soil water uptake in the lawn. Even it improves the fertilizer uptake in the lawn. And it reduces water runoff and puddling in the lawn. So, and it strengthens the root structure. And it reduces, the most important thing, it reduces soil compaction. So aerating the lawn is one of the best things that you can do for your lawn. And, you know, and you can aerate any time that you want throughout the course of the season. You just have to make sure there's adequate moisture in the lawn. So when you use the core aerator, if you rent it from your local tool rental place, you want to pull up 2 to 3 inch plugs. That's so important.
Mm-hmm.
But I prefer the month of October because things are starting to, you know, ramp down, our lawns are ramping up, and as we get that new burst of growth and energy from the turf, we're enhancing that by opening it up. And, you know, the key here is reducing soil compaction, and it's just going to be a huge benefit. So I take advantage of the month of October and aerate your lawn, but make sure that there's adequate moisture there so you get those plugs. And what do you do with the plugs after they're brought to the surface of the soil? You just leave them alone.
Leave them alone.
They'll break down. And the benefit of that is they're adding other microbial activity to the surface layer of the soil. There's all these beneficial microbes and so forth that enhance the soil's overall well-being. So just leave those plugs there. They will eventually dissipate, and all will look great next spring.
Yeah, that's the thing that I was going to point out is a lot of people may be aerating their lawns for the very first time. And you don't want to make the mistake of seeing all those plugs on the surface and go, oh, I got to rake those up. Oh, I got to get those.
No, they're beneficial. Just leave them there. Now, the other day when we were on the golf course, of course, you know, a lot of the golf courses, they're aerating now this time of year. Mm-hmm. And two, they know how important that is for the overall beneficial health of the turf at the golf courses. And all the carts that drive over and all the walking on those fairways, you know, opening that up and reducing that soil compaction, that's why the golf courses always look nice. So why not treat your lawn like you do, you know, when we're working on the golf courses to keep mm-hmm. those looking nice for everybody out there playing?
So agreed.
It's just like that. But what was interesting is, you know, I'm looking at all these plugs the other day on the course, and I'm like, you know, it looked awesome, but they have a blower where they're just trying to get it off to the side. But what they want to do is they still want to have people continue to play without dealing with all those plugs.
See, and normally I see a lot of those guys in the fairway use those as temporary tees when they're trying to get to that.
Do they?
Get to the green.
Might throw a few of those plugs at one another, you know? Or while your buddy's teeing off or hitting a shot out of the fairway, throw a few at him, a handful, if that.
But, you know, there's a way you can keep that inexpensive, too. If you're going to aerate it, make sure you reach out to your neighbors and tell them,
get
a couple of guys together, we'll save a little money. Because it's very quick. It goes by quickly.
It does. And, you know, I also want to say, if you have a sprinkler system or an irrigation system, make sure you know where your heads are so you don't take that aerator over your heads and damage mm-hmm. one of those heads. That's very, very important. Or you'll be trying to repair that next year. Not a good thing.
No. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up a little bit later on, we have a special guest. We're going to be welcoming a brand new guest and going to talk a lot about important appliance information. We have Kevin David, owner and founder of the Appliance Loft, will be joining us here in just about 20 minutes. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and gardening guys. And we've been covering a lot of ground this morning. We've been talking about bringing plants inside as we approach the fall season here. Well, we're in the midst of it, actually, and the temperatures are starting to go and dip down a little bit on the lower end of things as we go through the overnight hours. So we definitely want to make sure we bring our plants in and take care of them properly. We've also been talking a little bit about the lawn, a little bit of fertilization and also aeration. And on that same note, too, we're starting to push the envelope as far as any reseeding goes, as putting down grass seed. And you have to look at it like this: as we start fast approaching the middle of October, you know, on average, it takes about 10 to 14 days, Ernie, to see some activity or movement with grass seed when you plant mm-hmm. it, other than if you're using some type of ryegrass, perennial rye preferably.
Right.
But, you know, if you've yet to do that, go ahead and get it down. I don't want to discourage you from reseeding right now or overseeding. I've had success with it in the month of October, and so have a lot of other people. And there's been times in the month of October I wasn't so successful. So we're getting close, and get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. Pick up the necessary items that you need to make all this come together and to get that beautiful lawn for next year. Because a lot of us guys, you know, it's a pride thing. And I don't know about you, Ernie, but you know, just knowing that your turf and your yard's in check, you know, I take a lot of pride in that. And just recently, too, talking about things bugging you, I caught my second mole. He was giving me, another one was giving me a fit down in the backyard. And that WireTech scissor trap that you just step on and set it, I'm telling you.
That is the stuff.
Yeah, that's the stuff. And you know what's really funny? My wife really was giving me a hard way about this. Always bring it into work. You know, it's almost like your cat bringing the mouse in. And maybe as a guy thing, you know, you're like,
look what I got.
I love messing those dudes up. And it's been a long time since I've had an issue with a mole.
Yeah.
And trapping is the way to go after it. I can't say it enough. Forget the little spinners, forget the poison peanuts and all that other good stuff. There's a lot of mole movement out there. There really is. And on the golf course the other day, if I can get Bob Bard, I have to get a hold of him to post this picture. This one dude, this mole I'm talking about, had his way on the green.
Wow.
Oh, and I was like, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
Off, just off about 10 feet from the tunnel run was this dead mole.
Mm.
And I'm like, somebody slipped you a little concoction cocktail. So I put him back near the run and got my picture taken next to him. Like, and I was pointing at him.
That trophy.
Don't you come out here with that game. A little trophy. But keep that in mind. And something else, you know, we're seeing a lot of mole activity because, you know, we've had some grub issues too. And not only do moles like grubs, they also like earthworms. So, you know, you they're insectivores, you know, and stay away from the poison peanuts. But if you're having some grub issues, in the last two seasons, I've seen a lot of this. You know, people have come into the store and are like, hey, I'm having some issues. The downside to this is at this point in the year when we see the grub damage,
yeah,
and that's when you usually see it is in September and October, it's too late. So we needed more of a curative approach before we get cold. And as those larvae, the grub larvae get larger, they become more difficult to get rid of or go after. And then as we get cooler, they go deeper. So it gets tougher to go after them. But as a curative approach, they're still relatively up close to the surface of the soil. You know, use any type of grub control product that has Dilox in it. That is the curative approach, and it gets into the soil quickly. After you apply the product, you need to water it in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, from a systemic element and a preventative approach, you need to look at that in the months of the latter part of April and May. Those products, you know, Grub Free Zone from High Yield, it has imidacloprid in it. That gets into the turf, it gets into the plant, and when the grubs feed on it, they die. So that's when you apply that product. But right now, it's getting, we're pushing the envelope. You need to take the curative approach and use a product that contains Dilox.
Deadly.
And it works. It really does. It's a good product. And in the last couple of years, Ernie, you know, have seen some issues with grubs. Before that, it was rare that you would see issues with grubs, but sure, they're there. They're more present than ever, it seems like.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up in just a few minutes, going to have Kevin David, owner and founder of Appliance Loft, joining us this morning to talk a little bit about his store, and welcome him to the show.
And Patty Flager will also be one of the other associates there at the Appliance Loft. We'll be joining Kevin. And I had a wonderful trip down there with Katie, as a matter of fact, and they were very instrumental, and Tina, you know, with Tina and I, in helping when we redid our kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And we picked up a couple of appliances from the Appliance Loft and have been very, very pleased with those. And we're going to talk more about that here just shortly as we get up towards the top of the hour. A lot of great information that you're going to need to know and find out if, in fact, you're wanting to add a new appliance to the kitchen, or if you're in the middle of a major renovation in the kitchen.
We need to pause. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. In many ways to stay connected with us, make sure you jump on our Facebook page. You can also email us in and around the house at b105.com. And, Tony, we have Carol on the line. Got a question for you. Wondering whether or not they should fertilize now or wait until after they buy sod. I'm a little confused.
We just put down sod yesterday.
Okay. All right.
And we wanted to know if we needed to do the fall treatment.
I would wait a few weeks. You know, the sod will root in rather quickly.
Uh-huh.
So at this point in time, I would not fertilize it, and I would probably fertilize it the mid part of November, third week of November.
About the third week of November.
Yeah, allow it to get rooted in. I would have liked to have seen you use a starter fertilizer underneath.
Oh, we should have used the starter fertilizer underneath.
But although that you did not, it's not the end all, and it's not, you know, you're okay.
Uh-huh.
So just allow it to do its thing and get rooted in. And then, like I said, the middle of November, towards the third week, weather permitting, I would go ahead and put down that fall application, and you'll be fine.
And which fertilizer would you use?
I would use the Lawn Food Plus Iron, the one from Fertilume.
Okay.
Right. It's in the orange bag.
In the orange. Okay, great. Well, thank you so
You're
much.
You're welcome. Yeah.
Take care.
You do too.
Yeah, I guess, you know, that's a little bit challenging when you put the sod down, because you want to get that rooted in, but you mm-hmm. also don't want to do anything to where you don't give it a chance, the best chance possible.
Yeah, no, and that's another alternative too. You know, pushing the envelope here, we were just saying a moment ago about sowing grass seed or overseeding. You know, if there are some of those areas that you can certainly put sod down, just go ahead and do it. It's going to save you in the long run. You know, it just depends. You know, when you're buying straw and all that other stuff and working everything, it's an instant gratification. It's an instant effect. And our good friend over there at Turpin Farms, Turpin, give them a call if you're looking for sod. All you're going to do is go to the office, pay for the sod, go right out to the field, and I'll load it right up. It's as fresh can be. And I was just talking to somebody the other day that was going to purchase some sod at one of the big boxes. They told me they wouldn't give you 2 cents for it, and that's because they're not taking care of it.
Right.
I'm sorry, folks, but that's what's going on there. And go right to the source. Go right over there at Turpin Farms, and you're going to get a quality product. So certainly, you know, that's another approach versus overseeding.
Agreed. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to be joined by Kevin David, owner and founder of the Appliance Loft, and talk a little bit about something. I guess a lot of people are thinking about, you know, moving indoors. Spring, summer, fall, you spend as much time as you possibly can outside, and now it's time to look inside. You might want to be making some of those changes.
And you know something else? If you need a new range, stove, electric, gas, whatever, think about this. The holidays are just around the corner.
I was just going to say that.
The big bird day, turkey day, which is your favorite, the Christmas holidays. You want to be a standout in the kitchen. You got to have the right right equipment, Ernie.
That's exactly right.
A fool
right.
with a tool is still a fool. I always tell you that.
Yeah.
Do you get that?
I do get it. I hear it a lot. But now's the time.
I love you, brother. You're good.
Now's the time to think about that because you got time to make the plan.
Absolutely.
Get the old out, the new in, and roll with it like that.
You know, there's a lot of important information, too, when in fact you're looking to purchase an appliance. Certainly do your homework. My wife did. And we ended up at the Appliance Loft. And again, like you just said, Kevin David and Patty Flager will be joining us from the Appliance Loft here in just a few moments. They really gave us a lot of valuable information and have provided a wonderful product for us when we did our kitchen renovation.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you how pleased that we have been. And how happy I am just to have these guys on just to talk about some of those things, because I think all homeowners who are getting ready to get into a project of the sort, this is valuable information for you.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know, I know that you don't like to spend a lot of time in the kitchen because you have somebody who's taking care of all of it for you. Nor the grill either. That's another thing.
I spend a lot of time in the kitchen, but it's
at the table. I got it.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our guests have arrived, and we're going to be getting them settled in. But we need to pause to get that done. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and our guests have arrived, and we're going to talk a little bit now about your appliances. We spent most of the morning talking about some of the things about outside, bringing plants inside, but the most important part of your house, the kitchen.
Oh, definitely the kitchen. You know. That's your favorite part of the house, isn't it?
The kitchen table is one of my favorites.
And the refrigerator, the refrigerator with a built-in locking mechanism or system to alert or wake Lisa up to let you know that you're down there in the middle of the morning eating. Tina calls it raccooning. So she's like, she calls me Tony Raccoon. Yeah. So I'm always in there getting something out of there.
Thankfully, that refrigerator with the alarm on it was gone. I was constantly getting busted going in there.
I know. When Lisa told me that, I was like, really? Are you serious? Or are you pulling my leg? But we have Kevin David, the owner and founder of the Appliance Loft, with us this morning. And Patty, is it Flager?
Flager.
And she's with us as well. And Patty's who I've had personal experience with working on some kitchen ideas and projects when Tina and I were in the midst of that back in, 2013, Ernie?
Yeah,
it's been a couple of years, and I have to say we're so pleased with the products that we purchased from you. We purchased a refrigerator, and the information you gave us was incredible, and the blue star stove my wife loves, and I can't say enough about it, and thank you, by the way. So, you know, going into the holiday seasons, we were just talking a second ago too, you know, it's when people are, you know, they're preparing big meals and getting the family together and so forth. You know, when it comes to purchasing stoves or ranges and things like that this time of year, what are some of the trends, and what should they consider? You know, is it something that
a lot of people are looking for double ovens around this time of year because, you know, they're doing more than they normally do. Although the double oven has kind of gone to the wayside, a lot of people doing microwave speed ovens on top with a single oven below. So then you have the option to either have your microwave in one place, or if you just have a small thing that you want to cook, it's convection, comes out half the time. So if you just have a small pan of brownies or you want to do a meatloaf or something, it's good for that.
I didn't realize there was a speed microwave.
You like that, don't you?
Now we're talking.
Quicker to the table.
Yeah, in fact, we use the one at the store all the time, and I can't remember any time that we've ever really used it as a microwave. We always use it as an oven. So
really? So what is the difference between a speed microwave oven or a microwave versus a standard? Is there that much of a difference?
Basic microwave just uses, you know, regular microwave technology. So it's basically cooking from the inside on out.
Yeah.
Speed / convection microwave is used more of as an oven. So you get a little bit of microwave oven, you know, thermal oven, and you get that convection fan blowing around, so it's kind of an even cooking. So you can do two things at one time with the convection.
Got it.
Let's get your contact information so our listeners can jump on to a Facebook page and a website address.
It's theapplianceloft.com. We're at 3209 Madison Road. We're on the fourth floor of the Voltage Lofts building. 513-533-0440.
All right. Yeah. Have you ever been over there, Ernie?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's an awesome place, and you'll go upstairs, you'll go up the elevator, and a lot of great ideas, a lot of product in there, and it can be overwhelming until you run into a person like Patty and say, hey, Patty, you got to lay this out for me. What am I looking at, and what do I need?
And Madison, is that up in Oakley?
It is.
Yeah,
oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah. In fact, we have the Annie Oakley artworks on our building, so that's kind of a landmark for us.
Nice. Great way to find that.
Yeah, and, you know, we carry a lot of different brands that some of the other retailers around in the area don't carry. You know, like you said, the Blue Star, there's not a whole lot of retailers for that brand. That's basically an open burner, high BTU, so it's good for wok cooking, canning, searing, things like that, along with the capability of even going down to a, you know, a gentle simmer. So.
Right. Now, that's what I like about it, because things heat up so quick, and when we can, you know, when we get the chance to can, I'm not waiting on that big kettle of water to start to boil, because it's a lot quicker with that Blue Star stove.
Nice.
Tina loves it. It's a gas stove, and it cranks. Oh, does it crank. And she loves the saute on it. She doesn't cook enough, I don't think, for me. I need to get on her about it.
Well, you're always talking about locally owned and family operated. I just saw on our notes here, you guys are brother-sister?
We are.
That's interesting. How long have you worked together?
8 years now.
8 years?
Yeah.
Great. Nice. The Appliance Loft getting ready for their annual, or is it in progress, the warehouse overstock sale?
Yeah, coming
up
soon.
Tell me a little bit about that.
We're going to do. We usually will take a lot of the display models, overstocks, clearance items, and put them on not only on our website, but also in a nice color brochure as you walk in to move out inventory, move out things that have either changed models or have been returned, or
sure. I mean,
there's quite a few items on there.
Yeah, I'm just looking at your website right now. That's nice. You can scroll through all the models and even change colors along the way.
Yeah, you can make all kinds of selections by size, by style of cooking, color, of course. It's pretty detailed.
Yeah.
What are some of the trends when it comes to colors? Are people going towards the colors? Are they still staying with the stainless steel look? You know, or is it mixed up?
Yeah, stainless has been on a roll for probably the last 10 years, I guess.
Is that because it looks cleaner or I don't know, brighter?
I don't know. Some people just say they call it, it's the new white. It's yeah. It's neutral. I mean, it goes with any cabinetry, dark, light, any type of countertops. It is not the easiest to clean. I think, you know, when you get like a black enamel or a white enamel finish to it, yeah. You can throw the Windex on it here. With stainless, you're going to have the fingerprint issues, and
right.
Few manufacturers have come out with different types of stainless and different sealants on them that say they're fingerprint proof, but I haven't seen one that's 100%.
Yeah, I haven't either. So, you know, going back to what you just said, what do you recommend for homeowners to clean the stainless steel with? What's the best product?
You know, if you just start out with like a 409 or a Windex and stick with that, there's so many different products out there that are kind of like an oil based. And once you start with that, you start building on top of the stainless. It tends to make the stainless a little bit darker. So as soon as somebody
hits it or touches it, or as it dries out, it right. starts to discolor a little bit. So if I try and stick with a Windex or a 409 straight with mine, there are some polishes and things mm-hmm. in there that if you want to do a quick refresh, you can go over it. But if it's really bad, we recommend if anybody's ever heard of Bon Ami or like a real light, it's almost like a barkeeper's friend.
Okay.
Where it gets really bad. You can do this also for outdoor grills that have been weathered or had, you know, baked on weather, where you can take and make like a little paste with the Bon Ami or the barkeeper's friend.
Yeah.
And go with the grain, and that'll wipe out all that oil and any stains or anything on it that you can then start over, you know, basically come. Stainless is very forgiving. It's not scratchless, but, you know, it'll definitely come back.
What do you not want to do with stainless?
You don't want to use anything abrasive. Okay. And when you wipe, when you mm-hmm. clean the stainless, you kind of want to wipe with the grains.
Wipe with the grains. Okay. So it makes the cleaning less apparent, I guess.
Right, you won't see the swirl marks.
That's interesting. I know that there's times, you know, I'm wondering, what should I be doing or what shouldn't I be doing when it comes to keeping that clean? And like you said, I even though they say that you don't see fingerprints or smudge prints, you see them.
You do. So,
well, the other big thing, too, is make sure you're using a microfiber towel. Yes. Nothing with that has like a paper product that would scratch it.
Yeah,
microfiber is your best friend with stainless.
Now, do you sell this? Do you sell some of those products?
We do sell a brand called Milsec. It's a stainless steel cleaner.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty well known. You can purchase it at our store. It's not very oily, which is why I like it.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It just take a microfiber cloth, like Patty said, and go down with the grains on. It puts a nice clean finish. It'll take out any oil or fingerprints.
And you can use it on the grills too, right?
Yep.
That's what I need to do. I need to get on my grill. A little bit behind this year. Usually I try and clean it every year and, you know, get into the internal parts of it and so forth. But, I need to stop over and pick that up. You know, something else I want to touch base on too, and you were very helpful with this, Patty, is, you know, we have the Blue Star stove that we picked up from you at the Appliance Loft. I really found it difficult to really understand and hone in on the hood range. You know, I think I may have talked to you about that before. Tell us a little bit about that, because there's a requirement from the top of the stove to that hood range if you're using a high BTU type of range. What are some things that homeowners need to hone in on or think about when they're
installing? A lot of it's going to run is going to depend on how long of a run the duct is going to be. You know, if you're straight out, you know, on an outside wall,
mm-hmm.
That's probably best case scenario. You definitely want to make sure you have enough CFMs, which is the amount of power that the blower pulls the air through the duct.
Got it.
And it also depends on a lot the type of food that you're cooking. You know, we have people in that, you know, they use curry every other day, and they just want to get the smells out. Good for people doing fish and things. The main thing, I guess, between 27 inches from the top of the cooktop to the bottom of the hood, you want between 27 and about 33, 36 at the max. The Blue Star range that you purchased is an open burner, and that has some pretty big BTUs.
Oh, it heats up,
as far as heat, so you want to move that air around. And all of the training that I've been to for the ventilation, if you know you're going to be cooking something like that, turn the fan on about 10 minutes before you start cooking. That way it gets the air circulating and, you know, gets the smoke and grease out.
Got it.
Most of the filters that they make for the hoods, you can throw in the dishwasher. They make mesh filters. Baffle filters are typically better for catching grease, probably less noisy.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost have to kind of, you know, figure out what range you're going to use first and then
kind of do
the hood accordingly.
Now, will you work with homeowners that are doing, like, new kitchen renovations or new home construction kitchens, I should say, or renovations? Can homeowners come in to you guys and you map it out and measure, do all the measurements? Or what kind of services do you provide when people are doing things of this sort?
A lot of times when they come in, they already have their footprint planned out as to what they want. But a lot of times, you know, you can suggest, you know, doing a microwave drawer instead of, you know, building something into a cabinet and taking up storage space. Those have become very popular. Sometimes, you know, just giving someone an idea about a refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're going to have, you know, it in a corner, are you going to be able to open the door and be able to pull out the bins, you know, for the fruit and vegetable bins? So
And no, that is important. I remembered our old stove, if the door was down, would get in the way of the door of the dishwasher. So I guess how things are all related. And, you know, talking about design, tell me, is the triangle design the what most people do, or does it matter anymore? You know, you would have, like, your sink here, the refrigerator, the stove.
We have a lot of old houses around here that people are renovating and remodeling. So you're kind of working with smaller spaces. And as far as the large side of it, with people building brand new homes, seems to be the biggest trend is to have the open floor plan where the kitchen is all open into mm-hmm. the living area, which comes into play when you're looking for a quiet dishwasher.
Oh, that's big time. The old dishwasher we used to have, Ernie.
Yeah.
Tina's in the kitchen, and I'm trying to watch a football game, and like, you really have to run that thing right now?
Yep. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We're talking with Kevin and Patty from the Appliance Loft. You can join us in the conversation at 749-B105. Make sure you jump on our Facebook page, and their website is theapplianceloft.com. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Kevin and Patty from the Appliance Loft in with us this morning, learning an awful lot. We're going to share with you a conversation we just had while we were in break. But before we get to that, there are sometimes where trends seem to come and go, but are people still putting wood panels on refrigerators and dishwashers and items like that in the kitchen?
We don't see it as much as we used to. I think one of the issues is but that comes across is, well, look, it's nice to have a nice looking inconspicuous dishwasher or refrigerator, yeah. You know, the Sub-Zeros, the Vikings, right. The Thermidors, where you got the panels on them. I mean, make them look almost like an armoire or a built-in piece of furniture. We do a few of those. It's changed over the years. I think a lot of people are going with that stainless 48-inch built-in refrigerator because it has that commercial look that they're looking mm-hmm, for. Mm-hmm. You know, you're going to spend $10,000 to $14,000 on a refrigerator, you might want to show it off. You know, you don't want to hide
it. When I was listening like to you, it was almost like you were trying to disguise everything that everybody knows is in a kitchen. Anyway.
We know that's a fridge.
Instead of highlighting it. You're not fooling me. That's a refrigerator behind
it. What are some of the more popular refrigerators?
I think what's occurring right now is Thermador has come out with a built-in refrigerator. It used to be that Sub-Zero was the only only game in town for a built-in refrigerator. GE makes a built-in refrigerator now. So that's come a long way. Technology has really improved to the point where I was just telling you, Thermador makes what they call a column. So you can kind of build your own unit. So you can buy, say, a 30-inch refrigerator-only unit mm-hmm. and an 18-inch freezer unit with or without a dispenser to make a 48-inch built-in fridge. And what's occurred now is they've gotten to the point where they can install these things to where they're flush with the cabinetry. They're not obtrusive. They don't stand out in the room. And that's kind of the whole point of a built-in refrigerator. It's why they're a little bit more expensive than a standalone or a freestanding refrigerator. They've come a long way, and we were talking about hiding appliances. You know, they make it look very seamless in the kitchen. Mm-hmm. But you know, technology is there. Two separate compressors, two evaporator motors. They run independent of each other. So right. If your freezer does go out, your fridge is still alive.
That's good to know. What's the life expectancy of a built-in? Is it fairly long?
It is longer than a traditional, just because of the technology, a little mm-hmm. bit more heavy duty,
right.
Evaporator motors and condensers in them. They should last around 20 years.
You know, when we were looking at refrigerators, I don't know if you remember this or not, Patty, my wife was adamant about getting the freezer on the bottom. I always liked it on the top, and I'm glad I listened to her. So do most people go for the freezer on the bottom or the French door is
definitely the trend. Counter depth is another. That's usually the biggest decision. It's not really the style. Side by sides, they've kind of gone to the wayside, but mm-hmm. the French door, just the look of it. Counter depth versus a built-in refrigerator, like Kevin was saying, that fits flush, completely flush with your cabinets. a counter depth refrigerator is going to be just the depth of the counter. So that what that means is the only thing that's going to stick out from the cabinet is going to be the width of the door itself. So people seem to like that because it's a cleaner look. And right. when you walk in someone's kitchen, it's not sticking out, you know, 4 or 5 inches from, you know, the hole that you have it slid into. So if you're doing, most people don't do the dispenser if they do a counter depth because you're already losing that depth as far as capacity. So giving up that space on the door for a dispenser, you know, kind of takes away some of the space right. for it. But I think the whole concept of the French door, from what I kind of gather, is that people generally get in the refrigerator more often than they do the freezer. So it kind of puts you right there, kind of puts the freezer out of the way and the refrigerator right in front of you.
Well, I definitely listened to my spouse, and I'm glad that I did. So, and we did the counter depth, as a matter of fact, and it still, that really makes the kitchen look larger if you have small spaces to work with in the beginning. But I like a lot. Fisher & Paykel, is that how you pronounce
it? Fisher & Paykel, it's a New Zealand company.
Yeah, yeah. That's the refrigerator we picked up from you guys. And I'm not just saying this. It seems like things keep so well in it versus the old refrigerator that we had, which really wasn't that old. I just started having a problem with a defrost unit on it. And I was like, you know, it's just time to upgrade or do something different. But we've been very pleased with it.
Yeah, you had mentioned about the thinking things stay more fresh in that. I mean, technology, you see technology in every aspect of the world going on right now. You're seeing it in appliances. I mean, you're seeing built-in Wi-Fi in refrigerators and ovens that can be diagnosed from the manufacturer. You're also seeing, you had mentioned about things staying fresher. There's Bosch has a trademark where it's called VitaFresh for their drawers, similar with Fisher & Paykel does. It's all electronically controlled humidity and temperature. So you have a meat drawer or poultry drawer is going to be about 3 or 4 degrees colder than say the rest of the refrigerator with a little bit less moisture. Your vegetables and fruits are going to be a little bit less cold or more less cold right. and going to have more humidity. And right. it's all done electronically now with the, you know, with the way that they build these things. And if the good thing about that meat drawer is if you want to get some beer cold fast, you can throw it in that meat drawer too.
Well, yeah. I didn't know that. Okay.
You throw a six pack in there and be ready in about a half hour.
Nice. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We need to pause for a moment. We have, Kevin and Patty with us from the Appliance Loft, and we were talking about ice machines, too. When we come back, we're going to follow up with that. There's a difference between clear and regular ice. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Get it around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we have Kevin, David, and Patty Flieger. Am I saying that correctly?
That's right.
From the Appliance Loft and learning an awful lot about this. And when we were talking earlier off mic or in the break, we were sitting around the studio, and I got educated. It was one of the great things, as Tony always says about the show, is we're here to help everyone else learn some things too. But there's a difference between regular ice and clear ice, and I wanted you guys to share that with us. It's not as simple as putting some water in there and putting it in the freezer, is it?
No, and, you know, clear ice machines are I don't think they're a trend. They've been around quite a while, and they're gaining a lot of popularity. You know, almost people getting them as much as they would buy a dishwasher now in a kitchen. You had mentioned that the difference between the two, a clear ice machine works by running circulating water over like a little stainless steel plate. Mm-hmm. So it's constantly building layer by layer. The ice on top of this plate gets up to about a little over a quarter inch, depending on the style. Mm-hmm. There's several different styles now, too, and different types of cubes of clear ice. And the way that does it, it builds up, and then once it gets to a certain level, a little cutter comes on and little wires melt it, just like you see in a bar. Those are clear ice machines, and they've brought that into the home. They're not clouded. There's not as much air in them. The purities are less because it's running over the top of each other. One of the things, the difference between the two is the regular ice machine that you see comes out of your dispenser or out of your refrigerator
right.
is sitting in the freezer, you know, along with your fish and your steak and whatever you've just put in there. And that air is circulating around, that whole compartment because it's a freezer chest. So you're going to get, you know, it's going to pick up some of those odors. It's going to pick up some of the air that's come around. So they're clouded. They might not be great for a nice glass of bourbon.
No, not a good bourbon.
Or a mixed drink. One of the other things was the way that the machine works and counts out the cubes is the bin in there is not a freezer bin in a clear ice machine. It's basically an igloo cooler. So as that ice goes into that bin, drops off from the cutter, it sits in there and the bottom stuff melts as slow as possible, melts, drains out, either have a condensate pump or a gravity drain behind there. So as that ice melts, fresh ice is always being accumulated on top. So you always have fresh, clear ice in an automatic ice machine.
Interesting. I like that. Now, have you ever been to somebody's house, Ernie, and you'll a glass of ice water and it's got that garlicky, it's got those odors. It's like, really?
It's sitting.
You want more? No. Uh-huh. I'm good.
Well, that made perfect sense as soon as you described that.
You know, I wish that we had room for something like that. That is one element. I think that ice machine really comes into play because there's times we'll have people over or if we go down the street and you want to fill up a small cooler, it's just there. It's readily available. And just knowing the fact that I didn't know that what was on the bottom just kept melting and it was just right. Recirculating like that. Very interesting.
Yeah, most of these machines will hold 30 to 40 pounds of ice and produce the capacity of being able to produce 50 pounds of a day. So, I mean, you can burn through it. It's not instant. It's a process, but
right.
they're pretty efficient, and it's a great addition. I think a lot of people, when they used to have the old compactors in the kitchen, the garbage compactors, right. Which have kind of slowed down quite a bit with the recycling movement, that space, which is normally like a 15-inch wide space, people will take out a compactor and be able to put an ice machine in there.
So are there various widths or sizes of the ice machines?
Standard is 15 inches
wide. Standard is 15.
Yep. So if you got 15 inches somewhere in the kitchen, you can probably get an ice machine in there.
Yeah. Now, typically an ice machine, what would the cost of something be like that?
They go anywhere, I mean, on the low side, probably $1,200, $1,300, all the way up to
$4,000. Wow.
It just depends. So, I mean, the ice doesn't taste any different versus a $1,000 ice machine or a $4,000 ice machine. The difference is, you know, quality. You're talking right. like a Whirlpool versus a Perlick, which is a commercial grade type right. of unit. A lot of it has to do with the technology and how it's encased and built, you know.
Yeah, that's one of those nice amendments that people don't think about when they're doing a kitchen remodel or you're building a new home. I think that's a necessity. I really do. Can you, like, buy those on the side and just have them in the basement and run water to them?
Absolutely.
That's what I might have to, end up doing. Yeah. Because it never fails in summer. It's like, I got to go up and get a bag of ice.
Yeah.
You know, and... I'll leave it as is, but yeah. And you know, you just mentioned something else that's interesting too, is the trash compactor. I remember those, but they used to be kind of loud, weren't they?
Oh yeah. You threw everything in them, glass, bottles, garbage, and anything that went in there went into that thing. I mean, as kids, I remember throwing glass in there on purpose just to hear it.
Hey, listen to this. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Kevin, David, and Patty Flieger from the Appliance Loft with us. Their website is theapplianceloft.com. A lot of great information available on there, and you can join the conversation at 749-B105. Tell us what you guys have been together around 8 years. Is that when you started the Appliance
Loft? The Appliance Loft opened in 2003, so we've been around quite a while, time.
So what prompted you to get into the Appliance Loft business, or was this something you wanted to do, or did you just see a hole in the market and thought, I think I can fill that?
Yeah, we started out as an appliance installation company, a custom installation company. My brother and I would install appliances for a lot of the higher-end dealers. Mm-hmm. We also did Lowe's and Home Depot, would install any of their built-in equipment, anything that wasn't just like a plug-in and leave, like a refrigerator or a washer. You know, we'd get involved cutting out cabinetry, modifications, electrical, gas, plumbing, the whole works. We got into that and just saw a spot where it seemed like the customer service side on the higher-end appliances, on that side of the appliances, was lacking. And there was a store that Sears owned, if anybody remembers, the Great Indoors out in Tri-County, would sell. That was one of our bigger accounts that we installed for, and just saw where the ball was being dropped on the consumer side, the helpful and the service side of it. Mm. You know, you buy something now at a big box store and you have a problem with it, you know, you're kind of like, well, who do I call? Where do I go? Mm-hmm. I mean, you ever tried to call Home Depot to ask if they have something in stock? So what happened is we ended up turning that into an experience to where we thought, well, let's give it a go. And we opened a showroom in Oakley, which looks nothing like it did 14 years ago now.
Yeah.
Really
changed quite a bit.
Yeah. And we're in a nice central location where in Oakley, right on Madison. And I think the bigger thing is that where people come to our store, you know, thinking that there's just, you know, high-end appliances there. I mean, we sell everything from Hotpoint to Viking. We have a number of different options for people, a variety of appliances. Like you had your Blue Star, mm-hmm. you know, something not going to find every day. And a lot of people think, well, I can't, you know, I don't want to spend $10,000 on a range. Well, you don't have to. I mean, there's ranges out there that are under $3,000 that we would call a semi-professional range. Mm-hmm. May not have the high output BTUs, but has the look of a professional range. You know, some people don't, better to look good than to cook good.
And I think that stainless steel, it's that industrial look that I think people are going after where it looks like it's professional. And a lot of people, you know, everyone's gathering in the kitchen. People are liking to cook more than ever before. And when the economy kind of went downhill, a lot of people were spending more time at home eating in than versus going out. So I could see those trends where you want a better product. I just know that when I was down there for the very first time, I was impressed. You guys have a great display of various appliances and so forth from A to Z. And I mean, not only do you do refrigerators, stoves, like you were saying, the trash compactors or the ice machines, you also washer and dryers, mm-hmm. Dishwashers, which I want to talk about too. That's very important. And the old one that we used to have, oh gosh, it was so loud. I'm like, Tina, really? Well, I need to do this, but they come a long way, haven't they?
They have, yeah. And we've been in it and at it long enough to where we know, you know, what works and what doesn't, what we have good service with and what we don't, and we weed out and we don't sell the things that we have issues with. You know, we try, you know, every once in a while you're gonna get something with everything, just like a car or anything else, but we try and stick with what we know works and is serviced locally.
Right.
So, you know, you're not on an 800 number trying to
get... No, and that's what's important about, mm-hmm. you know, being locally owned and dealing with local businesses. That is so important. Just like you said, you're not calling an 800 number. If you call up or stop over at your place, I know one of you are in there, right? And right. And you'll just field that question, take care of those issues, and hopefully there's no issues. But there's a lot to be said for that. I mean, I don't know how many times I've called up, you know, various manufacturers, and it's like, you know, press 1 if you want to talk to this person, press 2. Listen to all the prompts because they have changed. You
know, yeah,
because,
they always change.
Yeah, they've always changed. And the you know, the conversation may be recorded for future training purposes, you know. Come on.
Certainly not for quality.
Yeah, not for quality.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Again, give us a call if you want to join the conversation. We're speaking with Kevin David and Patty Flieger from the Appliance Loft, and their website is theapplianceloft.com. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have Kevin David and Patty Flieger from the Appliance Loft. You can jump on their website, theapplianceloft.com, and they were kind enough to come in this morning and help educate Tony and I about appliances and kitchens, and although Tony spends a lot of time in the kitchen.
I'm always at work. I like to be in the kitchen more often than when I am, but then more work cleaning things up, too. So it's just, I don't know, Ernie. I think that, you know this. The kitchen's the hub of everything around the home.
It is.
And it's where everybody kind of gathers and hangs out. And, you know, we're all snacking on appetizers and different things and enjoying some libations and drinks. So that's the heart of the home.
You can have a great party anywhere or going on in the house, and you'll find everybody in the kitchen. We have Jim on the line from Western Hills. Got a question for you guys. A question on warming tool. Is that right? A warming tool in his Bosch range. Hi, Jim. What do you got going on?
It's a warming drawer.
A warming drawer. Well, John, our producer, fire. Needs to go back and work on his penmanship.
It's a warming drawer. It's on the bottom of a... It's a Bosch thing, and I don't know. She puts food in there and leaves it on for me when I come home from work. I don't know how long you leave it on, because sometimes I forget to turn it off.
So he's talking about a warming drawer, which is similar to an ice machine. It's one of those things that we were talking about that once you have it, you can't live without it. The ice machine.
Right.
The warming drawer has gained a lot of popularity, and they've come along quite far as well. What he's talking about is a something that will maintain the food to, like, on holiday. Most people would use them more so, like, on holidays, say the casserole's done before the main dish. You got to get it out of the oven, get something else in there. You can put it in this warming drawer that will hold the temperature, usually about 125, 140 degrees max. And there's also a little bit of humidity control adjustment on that, meaning if you're going to throw rolls in there, dinner rolls, say, you wouldn't want a lot of humidity in there to make them soggy. You just want them to stay warm and tight. The warming drawer is wonderful. It's a great invention. Also, we use it for the kids where if it's a pizza, as simple as they order a pizza, you got one at football practice, one at soccer, you know, we get done eating, you throw it in there, they're coming home an hour later, it maintains the freshness and the heat. Great nice. Product, warming drawers.
And what your question is, like, leaving it on too long, forgetting to turn it off, is there...
Is it okay to leave it on for, like, 6 hours?
Most of them will have an auto shut off on them. Most of the time, I think the one I have at my house will run up to 4 hours and automatically shut off. It's something a lot of people will forget about, so they do put timers on them. It's not going to hurt anything.
That's what I get yelled at about.
Yeah.
You're going to break it. You're going to ruin it.
Don't leave it on, Jim.
Yeah. If you get a chance, turn it off every now and then.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. So tell me a little bit more about that. Is that built into a range?
A lot of them are now, yes. Instead of the traditional storage drawer on the bottom of a freestanding range that you put in, they're putting warming drawers in there. So they don't have to use it as a warming drawer. I had one in my previous home where it's all where our pots and pans went. But when we needed it, it was there for us. So
interesting.
It's not where it's going to take up any other space in the kitchen.
I didn't know there was such a thing. So you learn something every day. That would be a valuable tool to have. Like you said, once you have one, you always want one.
Right. It's one of those things that when you get used to that, like the ice machine having the having the flavor and the availability of it right there. It grows on you.
Interesting. You know, we were talking also in the break to switch gears here a little bit. We were talking about dishwashers, and I was telling you that I still feel compelled today. Every time we're finished eating, I have to rinse off all the utensils, the plates before I put them in a dishwasher because I'm thinking I'm making it work less, harder. Do I need to do that, or is that...
As far as rinsing, go ahead and rinse them, but just don't clean them before you put them in the dishwasher. If the soap doesn't have anything to attack on the dish, it starts attacking the finish on the plate, so you'll get your glasses and etching. Your plates etching and things.
Really?
So that's kind of the biggest thing. There is, if you don't have a full load and you have some dishes in there, you rinsed them, you open the door, maybe it smells. Maybe run just the rinse cycle on it if you have that on your dishwasher until you have a full load, and then add, the cleaning cycle to it. Dishwashers, since they took the phosphates, which is what helps, with doing the job of cleaning the dishes, the Department of Energy took the phosphates out of the dish soap. So all of a sudden, we were getting calls saying, hey, my dishwasher's broke, Well, in reality, it was just really the soap that wasn't doing its job anymore. So what they came out was some of them are putting in built-in water softeners. Mm-hmm. And what that does is helps with pretty much the cleaning, the spotting, the drying cycle. Some people will say, well, I have a whole house water filter. Well, if you put as much salt into that whole house water filter that you'd need to be effective in the dishwasher, you wouldn't be able to get the shampoo out of your hair. It would have to be that concentrated. So,
wow.
It ups the price, obviously, for, maybe $500 or so. But, people that have it say it's worth it.
Right. Now, what about the little tablets or the little pucks that you can buy with the little red dot? Is there one better than the other, or any suggestions or tips you have from that standpoint?
Our biggest seller as far as dishwashers, and they are the best out there, is the Bosch brand.
Mm-hmm.
they use and do all their testing and research with the Finnish brand.
Okay.
Usually like those Quantum tabs that has like the little square pods and then has like the little red dot in the center. Those do probably the best job. You know, rinse aid is like jet rinse. That seems to help also.
That's a must now. The rinse aid is so important in a dishwasher now in that the jet dry, you've seen that, the blue looking liquid that you put in the rinse cycle, that disperses out in the final rinse. And it's almost like a hot car wax. So what the jet dry does, it gives that sheeting action, like Cascade would say.
Yeah.
It's like a hot wax on there, so it eliminates the spotting on the glassware and dishes. It allows it to dry a lot easier. That's a must since they've taken the phosphate out of all the detergents, out of the residential detergents.
Right.
The rinse aid is a must. I mean, we'll get calls all the time. It's not drying. It's not cleaning. We got spotting. You got to use the rinse aid. It's an additive that helps.
I've been to people's homes where the glasses are a little milky. Is that kind of like an indicator or something?
Yeah, that's something. That's etching on the glass. That's hard water.
Really?
That's hard water and nothing for that detergent, as Patty was mentioning, to attack. So it attacks the finish of your glassware, of your plateware, everything. Flatware as well.
So I guess you just throw the dishes away? Or the glasses away and start all over again?
Go with the solo cups.
there you go, Ernie.
I like that idea. 749-B105, in and around the house. We have Kevin David, Patty Plieger from the Appliance Loft with us. And we've been talking a lot about their store. Locally owned. With Tony and I are always talking about this. Locally owned, independently operated. You just can't go wrong with that. Brothers and sisters working together out there. And we mentioned personal service or service issues with some of the corporate stores. It's got to be a whole lot easier and more comfortable for some of your clients to come in and buy something. And then if they need another issue or an answer question or question answered, it's easier just to reach you.
Yeah, I mean, we generally use A1 Appliance Service or Don Bacon for our service companies. If we have an issue, they generally get in touch with you, in probably about an hour to set up a time to come out and take a look at it. Sometimes it might be just something that you may have to talk the customer through. I had one lady that purchased, it was the microwave speed oven, and she was having a hard time, you know, trying to figure out what button do I hit if I just, can I change the temperature on it? And so you kind of have to, you know, well, dial up, you know, it has digital, you know, electronics to it, so obviously, you know, it's just a tweak. Mm-hmm. But I had a lady yesterday call, she had a built-in refrigerator installed a couple days ago, and she was trying to adjust the temperature on it. Spend about 10 minutes looking through the manual with her on it, the user guide. Couldn't get an answer, couldn't get it worked out. So we contacted Whirlpool, who owns KitchenAid, and they were able to talk her through getting the temperature set on that. So,
and that's what customer service is all about. You know, nothing more frustrating when you're trying to reach someone and you're getting the runaround. You know, press 2, press 3. No, that's just wrong department.
That's exactly right. Tell us before we get out of here today and let you get back to work, tell us a little bit about your large sale going on.
Well, again, we had our annual warehouse clearance sale, which is going to be closeouts, returns, obsolete items, things that we've accumulated in our warehouse that we didn't know we had in our warehouse. That you know, we need to move out, and a lot of this stuff's priced 30% to 70% off. It's a wide variety of things. We've got, you know, all the way from warming drawers we talked about to dishwashers to washers, dryers,
ice machines.
Might be an ice machine.
I want to check that one out.
But yeah, stop out. We're open today from 9 to 3. We should have everything posted for the warehouse clearance here in the middle of next week for you to look at online. Some is already there now. As every day we're adding to that list as we're finding more items to move. So, yeah, stop out 9 to 3. We're right in Oakley, right in the heart of Oakley on Madison.
And the address is?
It's 3209 Madison. We're right in the Voltage Lofts above the Voltage Furniture Building.
And you can also get on their website, theapplianceloft.com. And your phone number?
It's 513-533-0440.
Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thanks
for having a little time with us.
Yeah, a lot of interesting information.
Yep, we'll have to have you come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have yourself a great weekend.